Is your marriage all that it could be? Is it everything you wish it were? Would you like to have a marriage that's far closer and more intimate? Well, stay tuned.
Tomorrow's World. The Living Church of God presents Dr. Roderick C. Meredith, Richard Ames, bringing you the good news of your future in tomorrow's world. This week, guest presenter John O'Gwen explores building an intimate marriage. And now, John O'Gwen.
Well, greetings, friends. You know, people don't hope or dream or plan for their first divorce. Little children read the storybooks and the fairy tales. The fairy tales usually conclude with the arrival of Prince Charming, and then they lived happily ever after. The problem, of course, is the fairy tales never quite tell you how to do that. People don't know how to live happily ever after. Today, I want to show you some very important parts of that how. You realize that you were made for intimacy? God made us as human beings to have an intimate relationship with a lifelong mate, an intimate relationship with Him. Back in the book of Genesis, chapter 2, we read about the creation of the first man and the first woman. Genesis 2, verse 15. God took the man that He had made, and He placed him in the Garden of Eden to dress it and keep it. God, out of the ground, had made all of the animals, that's described in verse 19, and He brought them to Adam to see what Adam would call them. Well, Adam was given the responsibility of attaching names to the animals, and he did that, but as the animals came by, it was apparent that there was no help, there was no companion that was suitable for Adam. He saw the animals come by in pairs, but now, we're told in verse 20, for Adam there was not found a helper that was compatible with him. And so God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. And we're told that the Lord God took one of his ribs, and He closed up the flesh. And the rib that He had taken, He made a woman. And He brought that woman to Adam. And He said, now this is a part of you. Adam called her woman, or in the Hebrew, it's Ishah, which is the feminine form of Ish, the word for man. And then we're told in verse 24 that God said, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Human beings were designed for intimacy, yet very few really achieve that in their marriage. Why is that? Why would that be the case? Well, frankly, one major reason is because they're destructive patterns that people bring into marriage with them. I look back over the years at hundreds of people that I've counseled with in the years of my ministry, at scores of couples that I've married, and as we look at those examples, the examples that I personally know, and you can look around in your own life and friends and family members and neighbors that you know, and you can see examples of destructive patterns that people have brought into their own marriages that have had devastating effects on their own lives. I think of one young couple that I knew years ago, Jim and Linda. They seemed to all their friends to just be an ideal couple. They were graduating from college. Jim and Linda were on their way out to, he had landed his dream job. And they had been a couple that were popular. She was a cheerleader. He was an athlete. They seemed to have it all together. She was bubbly and vivacious. He was a high achiever. And yet, in reality, there were a lot of things that were buried beneath the surface. Linda had grown up in an alcoholic family. Her mother had divorced several times. She left home as a teenager and finished high school living with some friends. The outward vivaciousness that seemed to characterize her personality hid a very insecure person. In reality, based on their background, Jim and Linda were both weighted down with feelings of inadequacy and insecurity. And it took a toll. It made them very super sensitive to criticism, and it carried over in terms of what happened in their lives. Because you see, they didn't live happily ever after. The dreams turned to nightmares. Bitterness and acrimony became a part of their relationship. I think of another couple, an older couple that got married, Bob and Doris. You know, Doris had gotten married the first time as a teenager. She had reared a family. Her husband had provided for the family, but he had never really been there emotionally for either her or the children. At the time I knew her, she had been widowed for several years. She was a very lonely person. When she met Bob, he seemed to be an exciting person, an individual who was bubbly and who was really passionate about life and about any number of things. They thought that each one could supply their needs. They thought that each one would fill that empty spot, would ensure that the loneliness that they both had in their lives would dissipate. But in reality, they were both very emotionally fragile. They were quick to misinterpret. And those happy dreams, the fairy tale ending that they had anticipated, wasn't to be the case in their life. People so often find that what they want doesn't materialize. Now, why don't they change? Well, frankly, my friends, they're roadblocks to change. People don't set out to be unhappy. That's not their goal. That's not their motive. But they're roadblocks that stand in the way of change. And so often, people don't understand what those roadblocks are. If you don't understand what they are, where you can go around them or remove them, then you will be stymied by the same things that have been represented the end of relationships for so many others. The first roadblock that I would call your attention to is simply an unwillingness to take personal responsibility for making things different. King Saul was a man in Scripture who certainly evidenced that characteristic. You know, this book, the Bible, is the world's greatest psychology book. It tells you the lives of human beings, and it tells you how they handled life and how they met the challenges and the difficulties. Some met those difficulties with success. Others met them in a very unsuccessful way. The story of Saul is the story of a man who met his life's challenges in a very unsuccessful way. An example that we can note is back in 1 Samuel chapter 24. Saul had been on the chase after David. David was a hero in Israel after the slaying of Goliath. He was actually Saul's son-in-law. But Saul was a very jealous and a very insecure person. He wanted to be popular. He wanted to be accepted. He wanted to be approved of. And in Saul's mind, David was the cause of his problems. He looked at David's popularity as though that were the cause of the way people viewed him. Saul had remorse and regret at various times, but Saul never made any real changes. There was a reason. Saul did not take personal responsibility for changing his life. In 1 Samuel chapter 24, we read a story where David was on the run from Saul, and Saul actually found him, but didn't realize he had found him because David and some men were hidden in a cave. Saul came into the cave and didn't see them because, of course, he was coming in from the daylight. The cave was dark, but they saw him. And David had the opportunity to kill Saul. That's what some of the men with him thought he should do. But you see, David really wasn't wanting to hurt Saul. What he did do was he cut off the skirt of Saul's robe, and when Saul then went back outside, it was realized that his robe was cut off. David then came out of the cave, said, "I cut your robe off, King Saul. You know, if I were out to hurt you, if I were out to do to you the things that you think, I could have killed you." Well, you read the story and you find that when Saul heard David in verse 16, Saul said, "Is this your voice, my son David?" Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And he said, "You are more righteous than I am." Saul went home, we're told in verse 22. But David knew that nothing had really changed. If you come on over a little bit later in chapter 26, you find a very similar account, a very similar situation where, again, Saul was chasing David. David had a chance to kill him. And he only took two items from where Saul was asleep at night. And David took a couple of items so that he could prove that he came down close to Saul. And when he took them and he got off up on a cliff, and he then called down, and Saul saw him up there, and David showed his spear and the water jug, and he said, "You know, King, if I were really wanting to hurt you, if I were after you the way you think I am, I could have killed you right then." Again, the same thing. Saul said, "Oh, I'm sorry." He cried. He expressed regret, but he never changed. You see, as Saul would think about it and as he would brood about his circumstances and his situations, Saul could never face the fact that he had to take responsibility for changing himself. Saul blamed his problems on other people. His difficulties were the result of David. At least that was what Saul thought. Many people are like Saul. They never really change. They may express remorse and regret, but they don't change. They don't change because they don't take personal responsibility for changing. Now, there are other factors. There are other roadblocks that stand in the way of people making the changes they want. Sometimes it's merely ignorance of what and how to change. They don't know exactly what changes to make. You can't change in generalities. If you're going to change, you have to make specific changes. Sometimes people don't know how to go about making those changes. In other cases, it's fear that stands in the way. People are afraid. They don't want someone to hurt them. This leads to self-protective strategies. People putting up barriers, walls, to ensure that nobody actually gets close enough to hurt them. But those fears of making changes, "Well, if I do this, maybe he or she will take advantage of me." Sometimes it's pride. You know, pride can stand in the way of saying, "I'm sorry." Pride stands in the way of admitting we're wrong. It takes humility to do that. Pride is a roadblock to change. And sometimes, just plain old self-centeredness. People want what they want. The world in their mind revolves around them. Well, if that's the case, there are no real changes that are meaningful that are going to take place. Well, this is an important subject that we're covering today on how to really build an intimate marriage. And to help you in your understanding of this vital subject, I would like to now offer you a free copy of our booklet, Build a Joyous Marriage. This important booklet contains practical advice that will help you in your marriage. Pick up the phone right now and order your own free copy of Build a Joyous Marriage. Would you like for your marriage to be more intimate and more happy? Well, if so, then pick up the phone right now and order your own free copy of Build a Joyous Marriage.
This informative booklet is yours absolutely free. No cost, no obligation. If you call this toll-free number, 1-800-934-5582. That's 1-800-934-5582. Or send your request to Tomorrow's World, P.O. Box 501-304, San Diego, California, 92150. With this offer, you will also receive your free subscription to Tomorrow's World magazine. Tomorrow's World magazine keeps you up to date with world trends, Bible prophecy, and the very meaning of life itself. Tomorrow's World. Call now.
Now let's look at some vital keys to building greater intimacy in your marriage. You know, the most important component of an intimate marriage is trust. There's no more important component in any healthy relationship than trust. You can't have a good relationship, whether it's in a family or whether it's between friends, if there's not trust. You've got to trust someone's motives, or you're not going to be close to that person. You can't have closeness without trust. Now, what are the components that build trust in a marriage? The first and perhaps the most important component of trust is genuine faithfulness between a husband and wife. Without that faithfulness, there is a sense of betrayal. There's a sense of hurt. There's damage that is done to a relationship. In the Ten Commandments, God said very simply, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." That's something that devastates a marriage. It has a devastating effect on the trust and the confidence that two people have for one another. Because there was a time when they made a promise. They made a promise that they would be faithful to one another. That they would forsake all others and be faithful to one another. And when that promise is broken, there is tremendous damage done to trust. But actually committing adultery isn't the only way to undermine trust. Sometimes people rationalize and justify in their conduct that they're, quote, not hurting anybody, because maybe they're going to pornographic websites on the internet. Or perhaps they're looking at magazines or going to movies or watching television shows that sort of push the edge in terms of faithfulness, in terms of pornography, in terms of things that take their mind and their desire away from their mate. Many marriages have been greatly damaged because perhaps a wife found out that her husband had been visiting internet chat rooms and passing himself off as though he were single, or that he had been visiting internet porn sites. I've personally counseled with couples that have been, a marriage has been devastated because trust has been broken down in such ways. Well, people can rationalize and say, well, it's just, you know, I'm not hurting anybody. That's sort of a victimless crime. My friends, there's no such thing as a victimless crime. When you do something like that, the victim is your mate, the victim is your marriage, and in reality, you become a victim yourself by your own poor choices. Now, faithfulness in terms of moral faithfulness is not the only aspect of trust in a marriage. It's important and it's vital to be morally faithful to your mate, but you also have to avoid belittling your partner. That's a part of trust too, because if you put someone down, if you make your husband or your wife the butt of jokes, you say things in front of others that humiliate or embarrass them, then why would you expect them to open up to you and to express their deepest and most innermost feelings? In Proverbs 31, we have an example of what is called the virtuous woman. And the characteristics of this virtuous woman are described here in Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31:10, "Who can find a virtuous woman? Her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her." Now that's a vital aspect. He trusts in her. Why? Verse 12 says, "Because she will do him good and not evil all the days of her life." That's a wonderful thing to be able to say, a husband about his wife or a wife about her husband. Another very vital key to building an intimate marriage is understanding the importance of forgiveness. Forgiveness is a pretty simple thing, and yet it is also very vital. You know what forgiveness entails? Forgiveness involves turning loose of trying to get even, trying to even the score. I want to show you something that may help you understand the meaning of the word forgive a little more clearly. In Matthew chapter 6, a very familiar set of scriptures, the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus Christ is giving, and in this particular part of Matthew 6, the disciples had asked Jesus to teach them to pray, and he gave them an outline of prayer, something that is commonly called the Lord's Prayer. Notice what he told them here in this context, Matthew chapter 6, verse 12, "Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors." What does that mean, "forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors"? Well, it's interesting because if you go back to Mark chapter 1, you will find that in the Greek language, which is the language that our New Testament was written in the Greek language, the very same word that is translated forgive in Matthew 6 is used here in Mark chapter 1 and verse 18 in a different context. The account here in Mark 1 tells of Jesus coming and seeing the brothers Simon and Andrew. They were fishermen. They were at their boats with their nets. And Jesus told them in verse 17, "Come after me, and I will make you fishers of men." And straightway they forsook their nets and followed him. The word that is translated forsook here in verse 18 is exactly the same word that is rendered forgive back in Matthew 6. So, when Jesus expressed this in the Sermon on the Mount, the Lord's Prayer as it's commonly called, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors, what in reality he was saying is we're asking God to forsake our debts, just like we're willing to forsake the debts that are owed to us. That's what forgiveness involves. It involves forsaking what we feel is owed to us. It means turning loose. The Apostle Paul, writing in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, expressed characteristics of love. Love is long-suffering and it's kind. Love is not easily provoked. Love does not keep account of evil. Doesn't rejoice in iniquity, rejoices in the truth. So often it seems that those who have grown up being unaccepted, in their adulthood, they become the unaccepting. They've never really understood the concept that God calls grace, something that is freely given or bestowed. Another very important point is to understand the importance of communication. Developing healthy communication between a husband and wife is vital. You know, if you're going to communicate, it takes two. Not only one to talk, but one to listen. You've got to be an active listener. Because we send a message to whoever's talking to us by the way that we respond. Is having a closer, more intimate marriage worth your time? Is it worth the time and the effort? Well, this is a vital subject. And in order to help you in your understanding of this vital subject, I would like to again offer you a free copy of our booklet, Build a Joyous Marriage. This book contains chapters on how to build a God-centered marriage. Would you like for your marriage to be more intimate and more happy? Well, if so, then pick up the phone right now and order your own free copy of Build a Joyous Marriage.
This informative booklet is yours absolutely free. No cost, no obligation. If you call this toll-free number, 1-800-934-5582. That's 1-800-934-5582. Or send your request to Tomorrow's World, P.O. Box 501-304, San Diego, California, 92150. With this offer, you will also receive your free subscription to Tomorrow's World magazine. Tomorrow's World magazine keeps you up to date with world trends, Bible prophecy, and the very meaning of life itself. Tomorrow's World. Call now.
A final key that I'd like to give to you and leave with you here today is the importance of understanding the way of give as opposed to the way of get. Very important principle that Jesus Christ brought out many times. Luke 6 summarizes it well. Jesus said in Luke chapter 6 and verse 38, "Give and it'll be given to you. Good measure, pressed down." He emphasized that with the same measure that you mete it out, it'll be measured to you again. It's vital to be a giver. Sometimes people are looking only for what they can get. They want someone else to meet all of their needs. Frankly, my friends, there's no other human being on this earth who can meet all your needs. There's only one source of meeting all the needs that you and I have. of really quenching that deep inner thirst, of really filling that empty spot. Now, if you want to build a more intimate marriage, if you want your marriage to be what God intended marriage to be and what it truly can become, then there are a number of things that you've got to do. We've gone over some very key points today. It's important for you to keep a perspective, to never forget that the most important intimate relationship is the one we have with God. He's the only one that can supply all of our needs. He's the only one that can fill our inner emptiness. Now, building that relationship with your Creator enables you to have that inner peace that will carry over in all of your other relationships and all of your human relationships. It's important in terms of maintaining that sense of peace, maintaining that outlook and that approach to life, to be a thankful person. Count your blessings. You know, some people go through life and all they see is the problems and the troubles. Count your blessings. Try to look at the lighter side. Sometimes we all take ourselves too seriously, and problems get blown up all out of proportion. You and I were made for intimacy. But that intimacy doesn't come naturally, because fear and defensiveness all too often get in the way. Things that we've gone through and experienced in our life that have built up certain fears and certain defense mechanisms that stand in our way of truly being open, being close, being intimate with our mate, and having that kind of relationship for which you and I were designed. Well, I'll tell you, my friends, if you really want to grow in that way, God will enable you to do that. He will help you as you try to focus in on these things that we've covered in this program today. And I invite you to tune in each and every week when Dr. Meredith and Richard Ames will continue to explain the entire way of life that God offers us, as well as the end-time prophecies of our Bible. So be sure to join us right here next week at the same time.
This informative booklet is yours absolutely free. No cost, no obligation, if you call this toll-free number, 1-800-934-5582. Or send your request to Tomorrow's World, P.O. Box 501-304, San Diego, California, 92150. We invite you to visit our webpage at tomorrowsworld.org. The preceding program is produced by the Living Church of God.